the greatest injustice in the world was for someone never to have heard the good news about Jesus. And the greatest act of love was to introduce someone to Jesus. The greatest joy is to watch someone encounter Jesus.
Well, hello, friends. It's Jason, and I want to thank you for tuning into this week's conversation of the Canadian Church Leaders Podcast. Whether you've been listening since our beginning in 2020, or this is your very first time with us, huge thanks from me and the whole team. We're just so grateful that you'd be part of this conversation that we're having about what it means to pastor faithfully today and how we can go the distance for decades of ministry with joy in our heart and a deep love for Jesus and his church. That's why CCLN exists, to strengthen the pastorate, you know, those called to serve in this sometimes difficult but very worthwhile vocation. And if you're new to our work, we do a handful of things, like this podcast, where a few times a month we sit down with pastors from across Canada, as well as global voices, to explore themes and wrestle with, you know, what it means to be a pastor today. And we curate this to a Canadian audience, knowing that there are unique themes to the story of the Canadian church. But we also know and love that these conversations seem to resonate with people from around the world. And we're so happy to have you listening as well. Beyond our podcast and digital content, we have gatherings like our recent Youth Pastor Summit and Pastor's Retreat. We just finished the Youth Pastor Summit in Mississauga, Ontario, where we got together with 100 pastors from across Eastern Canada, and it was a beautiful time together. And then we also have programs and cohorts where our desire is to bring pastors together to link arms in the work they're doing, to journey together, pray for one another, really learn from one another and their context, and to be strengthened in our faith and leadership. And one of those programs is our Emerging Leaders Lab, and it's currently accepting applications with the program kicking off in May. This is a 12-month pastoral formation community that allows women and men to go beyond just content intake into a 12-month process that goes alongside other leaders. The Emerging Leaders Lab is designed to be a part of your journey of development and to set you on a trajectory of ongoing growth as a disciple and as a pastor. And you can head to ccln.ca/lab for more information and to apply. And the deadline for application for the next intake is March 15th. But in case you need a bit more time to finalize details, don't hesitate to reach out to our team at contact@ccln.ca. And I know they'd be happy to chat more. contact@ccln.ca. Okay, in today's episode, I got to sit down with someone who has played a very significant role in shaping my imagination and values for pastoral ministry and what is possible through a local church to impact a city and a nation. Nikki Gumbel is the former vicar of Holy Trinity Brompton in London, England. Together with his wife Pippa, they pioneered Alpha, which is an introduction to the Christian faith that's run by all major Christian denominations in over 100 countries around the world. Nikki also helped to start the Alpha Leadership Conference, which him and I talked briefly about in this episode. The Leadership Conference is a unique opportunity for leaders in every sphere, across contexts, traditions, generations, and cultures, to gather as one, to encounter Jesus, be filled with the Holy Spirit, and inspired in the work they're doing. And this year's conference is coming up in a few months on May 6 and 7 in London, England. And I highly recommend checking it out if you've never been before. It is one of the most stunning gatherings I've ever been able to be a part of in my life. And the speaker lineup this year is 10 out of 10. In our conversation with Nikki, we covered a number of meaningful topics like his heart for evangelism and how to keep an enduring passion for seeing people encounter Jesus for the first time. We talked about Succession, not the TV show, but his experience of transitioning leadership at HTB after almost 20 years of senior leadership. And he takes us into what for me was such a compelling vision of training leaders and pastors for the church in England through what they're calling the Peter and Caleb streams. And lastly, he tells us why the 17th of April, 2033 is such an important date for the global church. We're so, so grateful for Nikki taking time to share with us today and hope you walk away like I did with fresh vision and passion for the ministry you're leading today. But before we jump in, here's a word from our friends at Generis.
We want to take a quick moment to thank Generis for partnering with us to make today's episode possible. Generis exists to help church leaders like yourself weave a culture of generosity into the fabric of your church. Now, we know any conversation about fundraising can feel awkward or tricky, but they don't have to. Generosity is essential to the mission of God in our churches. And Generis is all about coming alongside pastors to help foster healthy cultures of generosity so our churches can step into the mission God has for us. And here's how they do it. They take the time to understand the unique culture and story of your church. Then they take biblical principles and other proven strategies to build a tailored plan designed for your community. If you want to find out more, we want to introduce you to John Wright from their team. He was a pastor for many years, and now he's giving his time working with Generis and local churches. You can find John's email in the show notes of this episode.
Well, Nikki, it's such a joy to be with you today. Thanks for making time to hang out with us on this podcast.
Oh, it's good to be with you, Jason. Lovely to see you again.
I've been so impacted by Alpha, by HTB, by you, that I just really cherish this time together. It's such a gift. I have this like super fond memory of taking my friend who wasn't a Christian, didn't know the Lord, to Alpha in our church basement a long time ago. Before there was an Alpha Youth or anything like that, we watched you talking about the death and resurrection of Jesus. And I remember in the fourth episode, turning to my friend and seeing him experience some of this truth coming alive. And he and I are still great friends like 20 years later. And that was a turning point in his walk with God. And then I fell in love. I fell in love with Alpha. I fell in love with you and the team. And so I just cherish this opportunity today.
Well, you and Ben have done a great job with Youth Alpha. It's gone all over the world and had a massive, massive impact on hundreds of thousands of people.
Such an honor to do that. And one of the things that I love about Alpha is that it was born in a local church. And yeah. It's really special thing to see a resource that's impacted so many lives and served so many churches. I was just born in the life of a local church, a church trying to do the work in their city and their place. And I thought to begin our conversation today, I'd love to hear how you found yourself in pastoral ministry, in ministry in the local church. Because if I understand right, that wasn't the career trajectory that you had planned. And so how'd you find yourself saying yes to the work of pastoral ministry?
Well, my father was a German Jew, so I came from he was a secular Jew, so he didn't practice any religion, and nor did my mother. So I wasn't brought up as a churchgoer, but as a teenager, I became an atheist, and I was a very argumentative atheist. Then in my first year at university, through Nikki and Scylla Lee, who run the marriage course now, I read the New Testament. And it was through reading the New Testament that I had an encounter with the person I was reading about in the New Testament. And that encounter totally transformed my life. And so that was 50 years ago. And I think, unconsciously at least, worked out that the greatest injustice in the world was for someone never to have heard the good news about Jesus. And the greatest act of love was to introduce someone to Jesus. So that's what I wanted to do. And that's what I've been trying to do for the last 50 years, to use every opportunity to tell people. And initially I was practiced as a barrister, and in my spare time, I was doing ministry in the local church and trying to introduce barristers in my chambers, very unsuccessfully, I have to say. But I wanted everyone to know about Jesus. And then I ended up at HDB on the staff there. And then I took on Alpha in October 1990. And up to that time, I'd always been looking for ways to introduce people to Jesus, and been very unsuccessful in it, really, trying questionnaires on the street that started with first question, what did you have for breakfast? Last question, would you like to give your life to Jesus? And it's it wasn't very successful, and I didn't feel comfortable with it either. I didn't, you know, going up to people cold in the street, for someone like me who's an introvert, was not very easy. But what I found with Alpha is people like me who are introverts and not natural evangelists can be part of a small group and can, in a very natural way, introduce people to faith. So Alpha is not a place where we share our faith, but it's a place where we provide an environment where people can explore faith for themselves. And that seems to be what young people want. And the average age on HGV's Alpha is 27. The vast majority of guests are aged between 18 and 35. So we found that this was a way that we could fulfill that calling of letting people know the good news about Jesus.
How many years did you serve on staff at HGV?
I still am technically on the staff. I'm a curate now. I've gone back. So I was 19 years a curate, so it's like assistant pastor, and then 17 years the vicar or senior pastor. And now I've gone back to being like a curator, sort of assistant. So in all, from 1986 to now is 48 years. No, not 48 years, 38 years. How many years
What? Round it up to 50.
No, I've been involved there since 1976, which is 48 years, but I've been on the staff since 1986, which is 38 years. 38 years on the staff.
Recently, you were able to pass the baton to another leader, someone who would be the vicar of the church, Archie.
Archie and Sam Coates, yes.
And in our context in Canada, I'm sure it's similar where you are. This question of succession, of transition, is top of mind. You know, it has to do with generational change, but this is the moment we're in, and there's a lot of questions around what does healthy succession look like, and what does it look like to pass the baton? And I'd just love to hear about your experience, even for yourself, as the one, obviously with other leaders involved, but passing that baton and that experience for you. I'd love to hear a bit about it.
Well, HTB has never been about one person. It's always been a team ministry. So whether it was John Collins or Sandy or myself, there were so many people involved. When Craig Rochelle came to speak at the leadership conference, I asked him how many times a year he preached at his church. And he said, 48 times a year. And then he asked me, how many times do you preach? I said, twice a year, but I'm trying to cut down. So I have now cut down, and I don't do it at all. But so, yeah, I was preaching twice a year at the end. And so that meant so many other people were involved in the preaching, the ministry, the leadership of the church. So I think that makes it easier to sort of pass it on, because the same team is still there, the same people, the same staff, the same preachers, the same leaders of services are still there. There's only Pippa and I have swapped places with Archie and Sam. Archie and Sam had been the associate vicar for 5 years. Then he'd planted a church in Brighton where he'd been for 13 years, but he'd led Focus, which is our church holiday away, for the last few years. He leads the network of church, the 180 churches, I think, planted now from HDB, children and grandchildren. And he's led that for some time. So people knew him. It wasn't like he was coming in from the outside. So it was a seamless transition. And Archie and Sam are absolutely wonderful. Everybody loves them. And the church is growing. The staff are much happier. The giving is up. The only question anyone asks is, why didn't you go earlier? So that warms my heart. I'm just so thrilled to see the way that Archie's leading. And I said, the last talk I gave there was the best is yet to come. And I really believe that. And one of the things that my son said to me, because when I took on HTB from Sandy, which was in 2005, I really didn't want Sandy to leave. Sandy'd been the vicar and I'd been his assistant for 19 years. And I pleaded with him not to go. But eventually he said he was leaving regardless. And he wanted me to become the vicar. I went away with Pippa, my wife, and Johnny, our son, who was not married then, came with us. And I went for a walk. He was 21 at the time. And I said, you know, I don't know whether this is the right thing to do. And he said, what are your hesitations? So I said, well, in some ways, I feel too young. I don't feel experienced enough. And in some ways, I feel too old. And he said, well, does that suggest you might be the right age? Then he said, do you feel ready? And I said, no, I don't feel ready. And then he said, from Prince Caspian, that when Aslan asked, do you feel ready to rule the kingdom of Narnia? And the answer was no. Aslan said, well, in that case, if you'd said you were, you wouldn't have been. But as you said you weren't, that means you are ready. And then the third thing I said to him was, the thing is, I've been the assistant for 19 years, and I love Sandy, and I feel if I change things, it will look like I'm criticizing what happened before. And if I don't change things, what's the point in leading the church? And Johnny said, well, G.K. Chesterton said, in order to change, in order to stay the same, you have to change. In other words, if you don't decorate your house, it won't stay the same. It will deteriorate. The only way to keep it the same is to change it. And the same is true of a church. You have to keep changing. HCB has to keep changing in order to stay the same. If Archie doesn't make any changes, it won't stay the same. So I said to the congregation, expect change. And when things change, don't say, oh, it wasn't like that. And, you know, say, this is how it has to be. And so Archie's making lots of changes. And I'm so thrilled to see that. You can even see the physical changes when you go down the drive. And I think, yes, you know, he's moving this thing forward. And so I'm really thrilled with what they're doing. And it's a great joy to see someone doing such a fantastic job.
And then what's the personal experience? Like, I hear lots of expressions of joy and gratitude, but I know whenever we experience change in our lives, when we've been in one place and there's routines and a certain, and I know that you've given yourself so wholeheartedly to the work of Alpha in this time and other things, but what has the personal emotional journey been? Like, you described this journey of processing, even stepping into it years ago, succeeding Sandy. What's kind of been the emotional journey? You find yourself months after the transition and thrilled with what's happening, but then also adjusting to your own personal change. How has that been for you?
Well, I love my job. I get now to do all the things that I was longing to do when I was vicar of HDB, but had to say no to. I mean, I was able to go and speak at the Garden Tomb on Easter Day, Good Friday and Easter Day, 10 years, and launch the 2033 initiative, which I think, which I'd love to talk about at some point.
But I would love to.
But we have been able to do the traveling that we weren't able to do. We've been, I don't know how many countries we've been in. We've been to Istanbul, we've been to Cairo, we've been to Germany, France. Tomorrow we're off to South Africa. Then we're off to Mexico, then America, and then Rio. That's all before the 1st of April. We're loving that. We're able to go and visit the church plants, you know, those church plants. I was longing to see what happened to our church plants, but we had to be there on Sunday. And now we can go to Gateshead and Nottingham, and we went to visit, first one we went to was Tim and Rach in Birmingham. And it's just so wonderful to see what everybody's doing. We've been to see Al in Hackney and see what he's doing. We've been able to run Alfred in our local church here, which is Holy Trinity Clapham. And we've got that tonight, straight after this. We're off to week four of our Alpha course. We've got an amazing group. We've got 16 people in the group. Someone I swim with in the Serpentine, It's just, it's such a privilege to have this opportunity to really focus on Alpha and to be able to travel, to be able to do the new film series. You know, we're doing a new film series, which we're, and I think you've been kindly helping with that, but we'll be filming from June onwards. And that's, it's great to be able to just focus on that. The leadership conference is coming up. And generally when I've had the leadership conference, it's like you're sort of, everything's, you're working full time on everything else. Then you have the leadership conference and then you crash straight into other stuff. And this time I had a little bit more time to think about it. I love my life. We're back in our home where we were for 19 years when I was curate. So we're back at home. We've been here for 36 years. So it's home. Which I love. We have a little bit more time for the grandchildren, our 10 grandchildren. So we're very, very blessed. I have no regrets about the transition. We could have stayed another couple of years, but I'm so glad we made the move when we did. And we're just loving it.
I'd love to spend a little bit of time talking about church planting through HTB. I've been in the orbit of HTB working with Alpha. So I'm 15 years into sort of being around. I've been able to watch again and again and again, HTB sending such good people, all of your best staff. They're going to go plant here. And I remember this moment of like visiting and getting to know some of the younger staff. And what was so impactful was how much resource and intentionality was given to preparing leaders to plant, because it's such a decision that has to be made. And I know that the first church plant was 1985, and that probably felt like a big push. And now, if you look at all the grandchildren of these churches, there's multiple churches planted every year. But that succeeded a long time ago with a lot of intentionality. Can you talk a little bit about the journey of church planting, but also the intentional decisions and costs that went into making that possible?
Well, I believe that as individuals and as churches, we need to have a big front door and a big back door. So in other words, we in terms of our individual lives, we need a big front door in the sense that we're receiving the Holy Spirit constantly. We need to be refilled. But then we need to be evangelizing. That's the back door, if you like. It's no good just being filled and filled and filled if you're not. Jesus said, you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses. So the purpose of the Holy Spirit, receiving the Holy Spirit, is in order to be a witness to Jesus. So you need that big front door, the big receiving. Otherwise, you become like the Dead Sea. If you're just receiving and receiving and receiving, you get saltier and saltier and saltier, but eventually you die. And I think the same is true of churches. Doesn't have to be Alpha. If you've got a better way, I always say, if we find a better way than Alpha, we will go for the better way. But for us at the moment, Alpha is the most effective way we've found to reach people outside the church. That's our front door. That's a main front door, other ways which people come in, but the main front door is Alpha. So if you just have a big front door, the church will grow and grow and grow. It'll get fatter and fatter and fatter, and it'll age until it dies. But if you have a big front door, you also need a big back door. And the big back door is church planting. And that is sending out your best leaders with, I mean, we generally speaking look, this is our model for church planting. We look for, we call it vicar, but let's say a pastor, an assistant pastor, worship leader, administrator, youth worker. So like you have those five places, and then about 30 people, 30 to 50 people, depending where it is. Now, if you send your best each time, what does that mean? It means someone else has got to take those positions. If you don't keep sending people out, you're going to have the same people all the time, and there's no room for the new people to grow. But when you send the people out, you really miss them. And you feel like, oh my goodness, we've lost our amazing worship leader. We've lost our youth worker. We've lost some of our best leaders, because it's only the best leaders who will go on a church plant. The fringe won't go on a church plant. It's the committed people who go and the givers who go. And so you lose leaders, you lose money, you lose all those things. But what you do is you create space for other people to grow into that. And also it keeps you younger, because with Alpha, with you know, HTB Alpha, 18 to 35, you've got young people coming in, but then the people going out to plant, they're going to be people a little bit further on their journey, a little bit older. They're going to take leadership in the next church, and they're going to run Alpha and have young people coming in. So you get a flow of young people coming into the church. You have a healthy church. And instead of being like the Dead Sea, just water coming in, water coming in, you have water coming in and water coming in. I swim in the Serpentine every morning. You know the Serpentine in Hyde Park?
I do.
It's a beautiful lake. Some people say it's full of duck poo, but that is actually true. But it's still a lovely place to swim. Some people say it's very cold. But you're probably used to the ice in Canada.
No problem.
There is ice from time to time, but not all the time. It's now very warm. It's 7.5 degrees this morning. It's like so warm. But but the Serpentine looks pretty clean at the moment. In the winter, it looks cleaner than in summer. But it is actually clean. It's safe to swim in because there's water coming in at the Italian fountains and water going out underground into the Thames under Victoria, and so that it's that flow of water that keeps it clean. And it's the same with churches. You need the water coming in, the water going out. So to have a healthy church, I think you need a big front door and a big back door. And so church planting is not a cost in that sense. It is, of course, at the time it's costly, you're losing people, but it is the way to stay healthy as a church, to stay young and to stay healthy.
I don't know if you guys have tracked this, and I know that there's, you know, HTB is not the only church planting church in the network, but now that you've planted churches that are then planting churches, do you have any sense of how many grandchildren churches there are?
Well, I think there are around 180 now in the network. Yeah, but it's accelerating. Wow. It's accelerated. So the first church plant we did was 1985. Second was 1987. And then I think the next one was 1990. So we were doing one every 2 to 3 years. I think this year already, I don't know how many, but I think something like 20 churches. I don't mean since the 1st of January, but I think, you know, in the last 12 months, we planted 20 to 30 churches. So there's an acceleration because you've got all these city center churches that are now planting into towns and villages. So there's an acceleration happening.
I know a big piece of the puzzle to make it possible was a pathway for training young curates. And I'd love to hear about that. And in particular, I know recently there's been new expressions within that model in the Peter and Caleb stream, which I think is just so profound. Can you just speak to a little bit about that initiative, but then maybe within the context of the broader training initiative?
So in order to plant churches, you need a pipeline of leaders, and you need to train up. In the UK, the number of opportunities to plant churches is accelerating all the time. But what the challenge is to find enough people to plant into those churches. So I think it was back in 2009, together with the Bishop of London, maybe 2007, we started a theological college. And Graham Tomlin, now Bishop Graham Tomlin, was the principal of that. And Rowan Williams' wife, Jane Williams, was part of that team. And the person who's now the head of Wycliffe, Mike Lloyd, the three of them. And Johnny, our son, was one of the first 9 people there. And now I think 25% of the Church of England Ordinands are trained at St. Miletus, West School. So we did it together with the Bishop of London, who was Richard Charters at the time, who had a real vision for it. and he chose the name St. Mellitus after the first Bishop of London. But recently we've started two new streams. The one is the Peter stream. So in this country, there are a lot of people trapped underground by three things: by racism, intellectualism, and elitism. So they're very, very talented people. And it's not just in the church. It's in lots of areas of life where people don't recognize that some of the most gifted people have been excluded or trapped underground because of the color of their skin, because of their lack. Sometimes they're overlapping, but most often they're not, because of their lack of education. So one of the people on the Peter stream left school at 13, absolutely brilliant guy, you know him, Joe O'Sullivan, and then trapped by elitism, that it's sort of middle class people who have to lead. Whereas if you look in the New Testament, you had one middle class, Paul, intellectual, but then you had Peter and John, who were described as agrammatoi idiotai, Acts 4, verse 12, I think it is, or verse 21. And you can't even translate that in a politically correct way. But they were not highly educated, but they were brilliant leaders. Look, Peter is like, you go to Rome, what's the church? St. Peter's, named after Peter. And he was a fisherman. He didn't have, so we're looking for these people who are trapped underground, and they are brilliant. And we're looking for emotional intelligence. What would you rather have as your church leader? Someone with 15 degrees, but no emotional intelligence, or someone with no degrees, but great emotional intelligence? And Joe Sullivan left school at 13, no qualifications at all, nothing, hadn't passed a single exam. But he came and he encountered Jesus through a project that Sandy set up on the World's End Estate. His father had jumped off the tower there when he was seven. His mother was alcoholic, brother in prison. Joe came to work, I think you would call it a janitor, for 10 years. And then I said, Joe, why don't you get ordained? And he did. So he works in a church on an estate that hasn't been full for 100 years. And now it's packed out because Joe is an absolutely brilliant leader. I met the bishop who did his test to get into the Church of England. And he said he passed. There are nine categories, and he passed outstanding in all nine categories. So, you know, this is the guy who left school at 13. Trapped underground by elitism and intellectualism. So we started with four on the Peter stream, and then we had 10, and now we're having lots of people getting ordained that way. So that's the Peter stream. They tend to be young, very dynamic, quite a high risk taking them on. Some of them have come out of lives of crime, or been in prison or whatever, but they're just fantastic people, and they bring so much life. Second group is the Caleb group. So Caleb, as you know, was still going strong at 85. And there's a huge chunk of people, and this I suspect will be true in Canada as well. But in the UK, when the pension age came in, it came in at 70. And the life expectancy at that time was 52. Now, the pension age is 66, and if you reach that age, you would be expected to live to 85. So, and a lot of people retire earlier than 66. People who've been in the army, you might retire at 55, or in the police. So you've got this whole life expectancy of maybe 20 to 30 years. And that is an untapped goldmine, just like the people trapped underground is an untapped gold mine. This group of people is an untapped gold mine of just, I did an interview with Arthur, the professor of happiness at Harvard University. And he talks about in the early part of your life, you have fluid intelligence, and later on you have crystallized intelligence. so much knowledge. Some people say that the most productive period of your life for many people is between 60 and 70. Second most productive between 70 and 80. But this talent often is people who've stopped work at 60, not many of them just want to play golf for the rest of their life. Most of them want to do something. The Guardian newspaper here runs a column, which is a new start at 60. And it'll take, for example, there was one about a teacher. This person loved teaching, but what he really liked was magic. So when he left teaching at the age of 60, he became a magician, and he was able to do full-time what he'd always loved. I think how many people there are who love history, but for whatever reason, they've been lawyers, doctors. I was sitting next to, last weekend, I went to a party for my cousin, and I was sitting next to two doctors, a husband and wife, who had been medical missionaries in Tunisia. And when they heard about the Caleb Stream, they said, we'd love to do that. We have a village church of 12 people. There's one vicar for 8 parishes. If they were ordained, and they don't need any formation, they don't need training in pastoral skills. They've both been doctors for 40 years. They don't need any training in safeguarding. They know everything about safeguarding. They don't need any training in theology, actually. They've been CMS missionaries. All that church needs is a service every Sunday at 10:30, which those two could take it in turns to lead. And I guarantee, instead of having 12 people there, they would very quickly have 100% growth to 24. But I mean, they could be far more than that. But even if that's all that happened, it's 100% growth. And so there's a huge need. There are all these churches in the Church of England where you've got one minister to 8 or 16, or in one case, 29 parishes. And all the evidence shows where you have that, the congregations tend to decline. In fact, if you have no one, they decline slower than if you have one person with multi-parishes. But if you have a focal minister, they tend to grow. So in the Church of England, in the Church of England here, we have 500,000 people who are Church of England members who are aged between 58 and 72. 500,000. That's the age of most Church of England members. Now, out of that 500,000, you just need to find 10,000. That's not that hard. Who would, like this couple I met last week, practically anyone you talk to. And if it's not them, they'll know someone. Oh, they'll say, Bill, he would love to do that. Georgina, she would love to do that. So we started with one. A friend of mine who I'd been at university with, he became a Christian the same week as me, worked in business. And then he was a management consultant, a partner in a firm of management consultants. Then he was a head teacher and lay chaplain for 14 years, and then became a recruiter of head teachers. And I said, it was Pippa actually who suggested, why don't you get ordained? Because he wasn't even allowed to read the lesson in his parish because he wasn't a licensed lay reader. Anyway, I went to see his bishop, and the bishop agreed to ordain him. And a year later, he was ordained. He's totally brilliant. I mean, these people are outstanding leaders. And when he now heads up the Caleb Stream, and when he leads a meeting, you know, you think, wow, I wish every bishop could come and train under him on how to lead a meeting, because he's totally brilliant. And so that we had one the first year, we had 10 the second year, we had another head teacher, doctors, and we had people from all walks of life, male and female. And it's grown. I mean, I think there are about 90 Calebs now, but it hasn't grown as fast as it should. We need 10,000 of them. So, and then it works so well at St. Melitus because you've got this group of Peters who are young, enthusiastic, quite risky in terms of, you know, immature. And then you've got this older group of Calebs who they are inspired by the Peters, and they can pastor the Peters. So, wow. they they help each other. The Peters inspire the Calebs, and the Calebs pass to the Peters.
Mm. Oh, I love it so much. It's so impactful to hear. When I think about all that you've got to be part of pioneering, and I think if I know you, it's that you're reluctant to take any credit, or you're slow to take credit, but you've been part of some pretty courageous vision and bold steps, risky steps, and starting things that in year one might just have one or zero participants, but into year 10 could. And I don't know if it feels like courage for you, Nikki, but one of the things that I've experienced leading a church and pastoring and doing ministry is there's moments where I can't not do the thing. The vision is so alive inside of me, and I feel so met by God. But then there are other moments and where my courage wanes, and fear of criticism or fear of failure starts to really be the loudest voice in my mind and heart. And I just wonder how you've found courage when it doesn't feel like that vision is just white hot inside of you.
Mm. Well, Kay Warren says, life is much more difficult than you think it's going to be. And there are many, many challenges in life, and which we all face. We all face disappointments. We face health issues, relationship issues, bereavement, all kinds of challenges. And life is ministry is a battle. There's always, you know, if I say to you what battles are going on in your life at the moment, I'm sure you could name lots of them. You've probably got battles in your family of different types. You've got battles in your church, battles in relationships, issues in the staff team, issues of members of the congregation, et cetera. And I'm sure you could come up. Well, if you couldn't, then that's wonderful. But I suspect that you could, and I could do the same. You know, there are always going to be problems and causes for anxiety and fear, because leadership is not easy. If I was ever going to write another book, it would be Why No One Should Want to Be a Leader. Leadership is it's like fame, and no one should want to be famous. If anyone says, oh, I just want to be famous, we think you're crazy. Why would you want to be famous? I mean, real fame is a lifelong prison sentence. You might be locked in a nice house, but you're locked in. Yeah. The royal family in this country can't go for a run in the park. They can't go out, you know, they can't do anything. And people who are really famous can't leave their hotel. They'll just be mobbed. They can't do anything. They're in a prison. No one should want to be famous. It's a huge cost to be famous. And leadership is different from fame, obviously, but there's some of the same things. There's a cost to leadership, and it's not something that anyone should ever aspire to. But what we should all aspire to is to make a difference for other people, to give our lives in loving service of Jesus and other people. And if we do that and we're involved in a ministry that grows, inevitably you become a leader. You're a leader because your church is growing. And the more you grow, the more your profile, the higher you climb, the sharper the knives. And so the criticism, the higher you climb, the bigger the church gets, the more people are out to get you. And that's also a cost. But right now, what people are saying is, I don't want to be a leader. I don't want to do that. Mm. You know, I'd much rather go home and watch television. And I get that. I get that. But we must not give in to that temptation. Mm. So I would say the title of my book might be Why No One Should Want to Be a Leader, ... But everyone must, because you know, you've got to be a leader. You've got to, if you've got children, you're a leader in your family. If you're a parent, You're a leader in your family. If you're a pastor, you're a leader in your church. If you're a teacher, you're a leader in your school. People are involved in any kind of voluntary work, any kind of community. You have to lead, and leadership has a cost. It has a price to pay. And there's criticism, there's difficulties, there's battles, and that produces fear and anxiety. So that is part of the cost, is the anxiety and the fear that goes with it.
You guys have the leadership conference coming up, and I've had the pleasure of being there in the past, and there's no gathering that I've ever experienced quite like it. All the nations, so many denominations represented in churches, and just such a dynamic environment of worship and thoughtfulness. And what's kind of the driving desire in your heart as you guys host another year of the leadership conference in May?
I think it's life-changing. There were a couple who came, not yet married, but they're a couple who came on our last Alpha course that we ran here. After we left HCB, we ran one online in Kuala Lumpur, and then we did two in our own home. And there was a couple who came, and they came to the leadership conference last year, and they came to dinner here last week, and they said, the leadership conference, we think about it every day. It changed our life. They're both involved in one runs an orthodontist practice, the other runs yoga classes, but they're both involved in these. And they said it was life changing. And I think that's true for people. And, you know, these days, there's not a speaker in the world that's well known that you can't listen to on a podcast or Google their talks. But what you can't replicate is the experience of being in the room and being in the Albert Hall, which is an iconic place, which becomes a house of prayer for 2 days. And we have just worship 5,500 people from all over the world, Catholics, Anglicans, Lutherans, Methodists, Pentecostal, Baptists, every denomination, and pretty much every nation represented. And you see the beauty of the church coming together. And where brothers and sisters dwell together in unity, God commands his blessing. And we see this unbelievable outpouring of the Holy Spirit in worship, in ministry. This year, we're going to continue the worship through the lunch break because I went to a conference in Germany. I was speaking at Peter and I being interviewed at a conference, the Mayor Conference, wonderful, wonderful conference in Augsburg 3 weeks ago. And it comes out of the House of Prayer. And actually, Johannes Hartl, who founded it, is going to be one of the speakers at this year's conference. People probably won't have heard of him, but he's a lecturer in philosophy and also the founder of this. He spends 4 hours a day in silent prayer. And this conference, just walking into this conference, was this amazing atmosphere of worship. And in the lunch break, they continue the worship, and people have been prayed for all over the place. And that's what we're going to do this year. That's going to be the difference. It's going to be just constant prayer and worship. I think they had a prayer meeting all night at HGB last year, so people were praying all the way through. And it is a life-changing experience. Of course, we've got the usual and very interesting lineup of speakers. I think it's just being in the room that is the life-changing experience, and being ministered to, being prayed for.
Yeah.
Someone laying hands on you and praying for you to be filled with the Spirit. That's the thing. And that's what we really missed in lockdown, was that kind of like in the room encounter with Jesus, encounter with one another. And that's what the leadership conference is about.
There's no gathering like it. I couldn't commend it more highly for those that could find themselves there, or even after the event to watch what you can online. Like, it's just such an amazing window in, but there's nothing like being in the room.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I mean, I think there are a lot of people coming from Canada, 6th and 7th of May, Royal Albert Hall, and we're hopeless to see lots more of you from Canada. They always bring a great blessing from Canada.
Canada has a strong contingent there.
Yeah,
they show up. Yeah. One of our pastors is coming. He's retired minister who ministers with us as our pastoral team, and he's coming for the first time. And so I'm just so excited for him to get to just be there, and he'll be hosted well. And I'm just so excited for them to be there and experience it.
Fantastic.
April 17th, 2033.
Yes,
is a significant date. Can you, for those that it's not ringing a bell for why that's a significant date? Could you tell us why that's significant?
Well, and, I hope everyone has the 17th of April 2033 in their diary. Well, you know, Jason, that it is the 2000th anniversary of the resurrection of Jesus. Easter Day, 2033, is the 2000th anniversary of the resurrection. Now, the 2000th anniversary of the birth of Jesus was, of course, a big celebration. But it was, everyone was celebrating that. Whereas this will be the church. People who are not Christians won't be celebrating the 17th of April, 2033. But every believer in Jesus will. And it's 2,000 years, which means we've had 2,000 years since the Great Commission. Jesus said, go and make disciples of all nations. And we've had 2,000 years, but now we really have an opportunity to make the message of Jesus available to everyone on the planet by that date. Everyone's working together. The Bible translators are working on getting the New Testament into 99.96% of the languages in the world. And every language will have 25 chapters of the New Testament. Rick Warren is working on a Bible, a believer, a body of Christ in every community. We met in the Vatican in Rome with 70 Catholic organizations that are all working different ways. So this is everyone coming together, Bible translators, churches, individuals, and saying, how can we make them get the message of Jesus out to everyone on the planet by the 17th of April? And our part with Alpha is to make Alpha available to everyone on the planet. So that's what we're doing. So as you know, we produce a Chinese version. So Alpha's always, well, has been for many, many years dubbed into different languages. But the Chinese version is actually pure Chinese. It's the hosts are Chinese, the experts are Chinese, the testimonies are Chinese. It's filmed in China, directed in China by someone who is Chinese. And so that everyone in China can hear it, and Chinese people outside of China can hear it in their own heart language. And we're going to be doing the same with the Arabic version and the African version. And the new film series will be dubbed into all the different languages. And the youth series, which I know you've been involved in, is also we're going to find ways to get that out to everyone on the planet by the 17th of June, 2033.
It's so exciting, and I'm just thankful for the commitment that Alpha's made to building great resources that serve churches and communities around the world, and you give it away. And I know that nothing happens for free, but you guys have found partners and people to rally around this, but it's a great blessing at our church. So my story is interesting. I worked for Alpha. I told everybody how well it worked. And now I'm on the other end of it, and we're running it, and we're seeing people come to the Lord. It actually works. I was saying for so long it worked. Now I can say firsthand, it actually works. And we're so looking forward to these new resources, and it's just, we're so grateful. It helps us do the work, you know, and as you know, and everyone listening knows, it's so much work to serve and pastor and disciple and reach the community. And so when the tool comes along that helps, it's just, I'm just so grateful. So
we're on our, Piffer and I are on our 101st small group in a row right now.
Wow.
And what I love about Alpha, to me, I love the fact that Alpha's not about sharing your faith. It's about creating an environment where people can find faith for themselves. And it's all based around that verse, as you know, in Proverbs 20, verse 5. In the heart of every human being is a deep well, and the wise person draws it out. So we've got these 16 people in our group. We know that in every one of them, there's a deep well, whether they're atheists, Muslim, whatever they are, in their heart is a deep well. And the task of the host, or as in our case, we're just helpers, is to draw out from the deep well. And that's what makes it so fascinating. And that's why the questions are so important. So last week, week three, what about the cross? The talk on the cross, why did Jesus die? We don't say, what did people think of the talk? That will get you nowhere. But we ask, first question, has anybody here ever needed to forgive someone? And then this stuff comes up out of their hearts. Mm. Second question, has anybody here needed to ask for forgiveness? And that's very revealing when people, and people are honest, and people start to talk. And then the third question, what do you feel about the idea of God forgiving? And do you know, the person who led it brilliantly. She'd only been a Christian for, I think, 6 months. She's got her fiance with her. And she literally just read the questions out of the training thing. But so the first question is, has anybody here ever needed to forgive someone? And she did that with all three questions. That's all she said.
Hmm.
And it was the best group you could possibly have had. Why? Hmm. People looked at her and thought, she's not going to be able to answer the question. So yeah. they didn't fire the questions at the leader. They talked to each other. And the conversation happened. And this is what, this is why I love it. This is why we're on 105. It's every course is different and every course is amazing. I can't wait. It'll be 50 minutes to our next one, to the next evening. And it's just so exciting to see them. Someone who I swim with texted me beforehand, said, could we come and join your group? It's amazing to see that they're really excited about coming because they're watching someone involved in television, someone involved in quite a high profile job, but so fascinated by and raising really great questions. They're not people who agree with everything. It's very boring if you get all Christians coming on the course, but it's people who've come to say they don't agree. And that's what makes it so interesting and such fun. And then you begin to see, so many of them beginning to experience something amazing and life-changing. And that's a wonderful, wonderful experience just to watch it. The greatest joy is to watch someone encounter Jesus.
Hmm. Well, one of the things I'm continually impacted by in my encounters with you is your love for the Lord, for your family, but for those who don't yet know God.
Yeah.
And the way that you've, by God's grace, kept that passion in your heart. And the joy when you talk about your Alpha group, like that really impacts me. And I'm so grateful for your life, for your ministry, and for the work of Alpha. And thanks for making time to be with us today.
Oh, privileged to be with you, Jason.
Well, thank you, Nikki, for taking the time to share with us today and for the heart that you have to share Christ with so many. It's such a gift for me and to so many, arguably millions across the globe. And if you've never experienced Alpha in your local church, I can't personally recommend it highly enough. All the resources are free and you can find out more at alphacanada.org. And if you want to find out more about the Leadership Conference, to experience some of the past year's content or to find out how you might be able to be part of it in May, you can find the link in our show notes. I want to say a special thanks to the team who contributed to this podcast. Thank you to Nick Corbin and Will Lee for producing this episode, to Kitty, Jen, and the rest of the team at Alpha for your support, and to Rachel Souza for sharing about Generis. And as always, we would love to hear from you, for real. We'd love to hear what you thought about some of the themes explored in this episode. So you can drop us a note on Instagram or at contact@ccln.ca. Let us know how we can be praying for you and what God might be doing in your heart and in your church these days. Thanks for all you do to love people in the name of Jesus. Tons of love, and bye for now.